Hello and welcome to episode 38 of Jughead's Basement, the subgenre, lo-fi interview with hi-fi guests. Today's hi-fi guest is Cody Templeman from the Lillingtons and Teenage Bottle Rocket. Right now, you're listening to the Lillingtons' Project 313, the song Project 313. This interview was conducted with Cody in April of 2013 when I was stuck in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Cody was, of course, in Wyoming. This was originally released as part of the Lillingtons' Death by Television episode, which was episode 6, if you'd like to check that out. I was reviewing the archives of old interviews. As I was listening to Cody's, I realized it was pretty much a standalone episode in itself. So I added a lot of references that he talks about and released it. And I hope you enjoy it. So please sit back or keep driving or walking or falling asleep and enjoy Cody Templeman and me talking about Death by Television, which came out in 1999, and a bunch of other things. Let's begin. Mr. Cody Templeman?
Yeah?
Well, you sound pretty good.
Yeah, that's what the ladies tell me.
I know, I'm hot and bothered already.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm just getting the sort of right volume here. Yeah, you got a pretty clear connection. I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
I'm doing all right. Just got back from a run. You caught me all sweaty.
Oh, sweet.
Corey says you're sick.
Yeah, that's why I canceled the other night, because I came over to Rapid, which is an hour and a half away. Went to the doctor and there was they did a chest x-ray and all that shit, and they found out I had walking pneumonia or whatever. So
are you going back out on tour soon, or are you home for a while?
The 21st we go back out.
Yeah. Now someone's starting a motorcycle outside. That's fun. That's good.
Can we get that in the interview?
Yeah, it's in. I'm already recording, so.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That would be a good opener, I think.
Just to be. let me give you some of the rundown, and then we'll get to it. I have no idea. My gal is working late, so I was a little hesitant to do it now, because if she walks in, she might want some dinner. Because she gets home from working all night, so hopefully we'll get through. If not, we'll have to continue some other night.
We'll get some domestic abuse on the interview too.
Yeah. Oh, she'll be slapping the shit out of me. Yeah. Yeah.
You could work with this. You could have the motorcycle rev up and be like, oh no, she's here, and then the domestic abuse
and a stomp over to me, and then the slapping starts, and then. You know, put in your laughing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here's the way it's going to go down. You participated on one of them, so you know a little bit about what the whole shebang is about.
Mm-hmm.
So I interviewed Tim, and I'll get I think Corey tomorrow. There's a lot of editing involved. So don't pre-edit yourself.
Yeah.
You just ramble if you need to. I don't really have as many structured questions for you guys as I did for other bands. I don't know why that is, but if I find, you know, if I go through editing all this and I'm not happy with it, I may write down some questions and call you guys back in a week or two, but
yeah, absolutely.
We'll see. So I'll just go through a few things. And like I said, it mostly focuses on Death by Television, but I want to get a little background and a little foreground and, little your own history. So
okay,
I think that's all I got to say. And like you might realize, it's going to be cut into little sections that'll be interspersed throughout the whole program, so there'll be no long chunks of you rattling on.
Yeah,
but no, you like to be short anyway, so. so let me
I'm gonna do this like I've done the other ones, Mr. Sick Guy.
You're gonna have to edit out my coughs anyway, so.
Yeah, I might leave those in with the motorcycle and the slapping.
You should just edit in coughs for every question you ask me.
And that's all I get.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right, let's begin. 1, 2! Begin with you yourself, Cody. Where were you raised, and what brought you to start playing music?
I was born and raised Newcastle, Wyoming, and I don't know. I just I was listening to music when I was growing up as a kid and stuff. And when I was in junior high, a bunch of our buddies thought it would be cool to start a band, and we had the JCPenney Christmas catalog, and they had guitars and stuff in the back of that. So that's pretty much how we did it. We formed a band before we had instruments.
And you actually got your guitar from JCPenney?
Yeah, my first one for Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you just looked through the catalog and you picked out the one that was most shiny?
Yeah, it didn't have a head on it either. It was a headless guitar.
Yeah?
Yeah, it totally was.
What were you listening to then? Like, what was what type of music inspired you to start playing? Was there any certain kind?
I was listening to like a lot of like cheesy metal, like kind of butt rock stuff. Like I used to listen to like Poison and all that stuff, and then I got into Metallica and shit like that. And when we first started the other band, it was like heavy metal, like cover band, pretty much. So yeah, that's the kind of stuff. Metallica, Guns N' Roses, you know, Poison, Cinderella, all the greats, Skid Row. Since I was born, they couldn't hold me down. Another
misfit kid, another burned out town. Yeah, like Tim was saying the other night, I mean, it was harder to find probably more underground music from where your boys were. How did you first discover like stuff that wasn't like in the mainstream?
Through friends and stuff, like people who had tapes and like would make copies for you. The first time I heard the Misfits and all that stuff, it was my friend Zach who showed it to me, because he had the cassettes and he let me borrow them, and I taped them off. And you know, he had like the Cramps on cassette, he let me borrow. He had like Black Flag in My Head. Which I still like, but it's a terrible record, but it was like the first one I heard, you know?
Yeah, and those are some of the most outrageous of the hardcore punk. That must have been really blowing your mind at the time, I would imagine.
Yeah, but I mean, it was kind of good. It was, I don't know, because I was into like heavier stuff then anyway, so Circle Jerks were another one. Like, he had Wonderful on cassette, and I don't know, I listened to that and just laughed my ass off. Wonderful!
Yeah, I thought that I love that band. To me, they were always that sort of a bridge between the melodic and the hardcore, and also a joke core. I thought they were like the perfect band when I first started listening to punk music. Hope to get them on the show sometime. What's this band Tim talks about, Hybrid?
The Hybrids? That was like myself and two other guys from high school, and we just got together and we started playing like covers and stuff when we first started, and then we just started writing our own songs, and we just kept at it. Like, we would always practice every day, you know, just for something to do in high school, and you know, eventually we got to where we played songs that other people liked, and we got invited to play in other towns in Wyoming and stuff, and it was the first band that we wrote our own stuff in, really.
I'm just trying to get a grasp of like the smallness or the largeness of or what's going on. I don't want to judge and think it's too small. You were playing with just other punk bands, or were you just playing with whatever bands would play out, like rock?
No, we would like... There weren't any other punk bands to play with, like, or any other bands really at all around our area. So we would actually, like, we played quite a few shows where we would just rent, like, a hall and, like, charge admission, and we would, like, play a set. And then, like, after we were done playing, we would, like, play CDs and shit and, like, kind of bill it as a dance, as cheesy as it sounds.
Yeah, just to justify getting everyone there just for a short set.
And then nobody showed up, and we just have to like beg our five friends that were there for money so we could pay off the building.
Ah, yes.
We were told sellouts.
Yeah, well, sellouts to like the five people that.
Yeah.
You of course met Corey first, right? Or what you did, Zach? I sort of narrowed it down to. I know more about you, Corey, and Tim than I know about Zach, so I sometimes think about it in terms of not him. So, I mean, can you explain the sort of dynamics of who you knew first and how they started to play in the band that became the Lillingtons?
Yeah, well, I knew Corey, like, obviously since I was born because he was my cousin, and he used to, like, pick on me a lot when we were in high school and stuff, and I kind of hated him. But then, like, later on when we started playing tunes and the hybrids and stuff, like, he would come watch, and he was, you know, he was listening to stuff, too. Like, he was into, like, Anthrax and Danzig and shit like that, and we'd, like, listen to all that stuff in his truck together and, like, I don't know, get pumped up. Yeah, so, and then when the hybrids kind of quit, like, Corey and I just kind of got together, and I knew Zach because I used to hang out with Zach and, like, kind of skate. I guess. I don't know. I knew him from high school, and he was also in, like, Corey's class in high school, so that's how they knew each other, and, you know, we were all into, like, the same stuff, like Weasel and the Queers and shit like that when we first started the band, so it was, like, us three and a drum machine.
Yeah, that's what Tim had said, that he called you up. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, he found out, because... The hybrids had played with his old band, the New Degenerates. He had found out that we had broken up and that we were starting a new band. Or I don't think he even knew we were starting a band. And he called up and he's like, "So we broke up, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah, we got a new band going." And he said, "You guys need a drummer?" And I said, "No, we already got one," thinking of the drum machine. So he was like, "Okay." And I think I let him hang up, and then I called him back again and asked him if he wanted to play drums.
Were you joking with him, or did you really just want to have a drum machine and then you had to think about it?
No, I was just joking around, but I just took it too far, which happened a lot in those days.
He probably didn't know how to take you because he had said, you know, he first knew you as that sort of quiet, shy guy, and even I realized that, you know, you have this wicked sense of humor that comes out, so it becomes like a hidden, prank on someone if they don't realize it.
Yeah, and I mean, we'd only hung out. We'd only, like, I don't know, is that how you say it? Hung out? Yeah, we'd only hung out a couple of times before that, so.
Sort of a weird coincidence that he just happened to... No, that's right, he knew, right, because it was...
Yeah, he had heard because, like, one of the guys in their band was friends with another guy in the hybrids, and that's kind of how we knew each other, was through those two guys, and that's how he heard about it and then called up. But it was kind of coincidence that we didn't have like a drummer. So
where did those first rehearsals take place, and how often?
In Newcastle, like, we rented out a practice space, like, in the old radio station in town. It was like on Main Street in our town. It was kind of built perfectly for it, so that's where those rehearsals took place. But a lot of times, like, the first three or four rehearsals, like, Tim lived in Wright, which is like an hour south of Newcastle. He would always say he was coming up to practice, and then he would just like ditch out, and we wouldn't hear anything from him for a while. And so the first practices didn't take place.
He just didn't make it?
Yeah, he just went no call, no show.
And then eventually when he did show up, did you guys still practice if he didn't show up? Or you just...
No, we couldn't. He was our drummer. We had already told the drum machine he wasn't in the band anymore.
Now he's just sitting in a corner crying.
Yeah, no, he went on to bigger and better things. I think he's doing like dubstep or something now.
I think he was in ministry for a while.
Oh. He was in ministry before they got big.
Yeah, he had told me that he had to travel quite a distance. And then he was working in the oil fields too, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he would drive like an hour there and an hour back, like usually, you know, every couple weeks at least.
Did Corey play before he was in the band? Did he play an instrument?
No. I kind of showed Corey how to play guitar. Like, he was like, yeah, I want to learn how to play. Like, he just kind of wanted to learn how to play stuff, so I tried to teach him, and yeah, but he was pumped to be in a band, so.
I imagine there was still some, Tim eventually did show up to some rehearsals, but even before he got there, did you have stuff ready? How far along were you in deciding what your band was going to sound like?
I think we kind of had an idea. Like I said, we were like, you guys, like, Screeching Weasel and The Queers and, like, Mr. T Experience, like, pretty much all those bands, you know, from that era, like, we were really stoked on, and that's kind of what we wanted to sound like. We knew right away. I think that first Riverdale's record came out, and we were pretty pumped on that, too. We're gonna have fun tonight. We're gonna have
fun tonight. We're gonna have fun tonight. And, did you do most of the writing, or how did a lot of the writing take place?
I did pretty much all of the, yeah, most of the writing when we first started. Like, Zach came up with a couple of, you know, lines and stuff and titles and stuff like that, but like all the music I wrote in the, like, on the first section of the band, you know, like all the really pop punk stuff.
And I'm going to skip around a little bit just based on what I can remember, and this is just stuff that you hear about from fans, you hear it on the wiki, but I actually want to just hear you state what you think it is. They always talk a lot about a difference or a shift in the sound of the band from Shit Out of Luck into Death by Television. Do you agree with that, and what? Why?
Yeah, I think there definitely was. Like, when we wrote Death by Television, we didn't think anybody was going to like it. Like, I wasn't listening to anything like really pop punk anymore. I was listening to like a lot of like garage rock and surf stuff, like Estrus type stuff. A lot of that is where I got like the sci-fi shtick from, and then the whole time we wrote Death by Television, I was listening to Slayer. Non-stop. So I think it had an effect.
Do you find yourself getting into those? Do you get into like one band and then just obsess about it for a while, or does that just happen occasionally?
It happens occasionally, but it happens usually. There are some times when I'm not like really into one particular band, but yeah, every once in a while I'll find a band that I just get super stoked on, and I'll run them into the dirt for sure.
How did this shyness affect a band? Did you ever worry about it in the band, and how did you deal with it, and what did it become?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. Like, I was good talking to people on the phone and stuff, but I was like really had like a lot of social anxiety and stuff. So Corey would get pissed because like I would talk to these people on the phone, like promoters and stuff, and like just, you know, even friends that I hadn't met personally, and like we would show up and I would clam up and Corey would have to kind of take the reins and roll with it, and he's like, what, well, what the shit, and he's like, you're talking to him all the time and now you're just clamming up on me.
Is it just the anxiety? Is that what it would just hit in once you saw someone?
Yeah, and I mean it's something I had for a long time, and like I actually, like after that band, like I went to therapy for it and stuff, and I mean it helped a lot, you know, but it was just, yeah, it was just something I was, that always bothered me, was like, because I was always worried about people thought I was stupid or something, just real low self-confidence.
Do you feel that as you've gotten, yeah, like you've said, you've gotten better at it, did you have to actually be aware of making yourself talk to people?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I mean I realized that I, you know, what I was doing and stuff, and now I guess now I just don't care. I just don't. I think my cure was just not giving a shit anymore.
The songs are almost all based on like these B movies. Did you just had seen a lot of these already, or did you start looking them up once you decided on a theme?
No, like we, like I honestly, like I didn't even really watch that many like B movies when we did that record. We just thought that shit sounded cool, and like when we did Shit Out of Luck, like all those songs were girl songs, and like I'd never been in a serious relationship at that point. So we just said, if we're gonna lie about the shit we sing about, we might as well lie about something cool.
So how did you know some of these titles? How did they come about then? Because some of them are based on movies, right? B movies.
Yeah. Yeah, just, I don't know, like, a lot of them just kind of, we kind of made up, or, like, we would just, like, hear about, like, certain movies and stuff. I mean, like, Invasion of the Saucer Men's a pretty, you know, you don't really have to dig too deep to find that movie anywhere. And
what a dilemma for young lovers Steve Terrell and Gloria Castile.
You thought I was kidding.
Nobody will believe the Invasion of the Saucer Men.
And War of the Worlds is obviously, like, you know, it's like pretty much literature or whatever, so yeah.
All kinds of people reacted in all kinds of ways. For example, John Barrymore, the very famous American actor, this I know to be true, was listening to the broadcast, and although he was a friend of mine, ceased to identify me with the show and believed implicitly that America had fallen to the Martians. And hearing this on his radio, rushed out into his backyard where he kept 10 Great Danes in a kennels, and released the dogs, giving them their freedom, crying to them as they ran in all directions of the compass, "The world has fallen, fend for yourself."
Did you, I'm just going to go in a little process, and sometimes it's hard to talk about these. I know me, when I'm asked a question about creativity, it's just, well, they just happened, so that might be the answer. But did you, you know, a lot of them are just sort of metaphors. They're not just about these movies, probably because you didn't know them that well.
Yeah. Like,
did you have to think hard on how to make a metaphor out of it, or those just sort of come into your head?
No, I mean, we kind of had ideas on what the songs, like, well, we knew what we wanted to write about, and then we just, like, painted it up with, like, the sci-fi themes and stuff, but that's pretty much how the metaphors came about, you know?
Now, are you talking mostly with Corey?
Yeah, because Corey would come up, the whole shift was, like, Corey came up with, I saw the Ape Man on the Moon was the title of his song. And he's like, oh yeah, that's a good title, we should use that. And I always thought it sucked. We're not writing a song about that. That's stupid. That's retarded. Like, nobody, everybody will laugh or whatever. But, and then we were just dicking around one night and, like, wrote it in, like, 5 minutes, like, just almost as a joke. And then the next day I remember listening to it and being like, wow, this kind of turned out cool. What's up, the Ape Man?
And that, was that near one of the first ones that you guys worked on in this sort of genre?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. And that sort of clicked, and then it just, it sort of opened your mind more to not thinking they would be stupid.
Yeah. Well, and another thing too that was kind of funny was the Carlisles, like Ray and Brandon, when we would play with their old band and stuff, they always used to say that they hated I Got Abducted by a UFO because the lyrics were so stupid.
Well, I got abducted by a UFO, but where we're going, I don't know. But all I know is I've got to get home.
We always liked that song, and we always kind of got off on the fact that they hated it because it was so stupid. So, like, once that song came about, and then thinking back on that, it would just kind of made sense. We're like, all right, let's just do something that sounds cool and, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And
cool. Now I'm definitely going to do a skip because I'm afraid I'll forget this question. But was it a challenge then to, you knew you probably didn't want to do the exact same sort of idea for every record. Was it a hard trying to figure out what theme to do next, or if you were going to drop the idea? Do you remember thinking about that between that and Back Channel?
I walk around town with my head hung down, my pants are fitting up so tight.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was weird. Like, we had other sci-fi titles and stuff, and we tried to write them, but they just came off sounding like a ripoff of what we'd already done. I don't know, they weren't as exciting as the other stuff, and so we ended up just going with, like kind of the same deal with, like, all the Estrus stuff, like, all the garage and, like, surf stuff that they put out. Like, it was always either like sci-fi or like, or you know like all that shit kind of blends together, like, you know, noir films and detective stories, espionage, and like, and then westerns too, you know, kind of fit in there. So we just kind of went with that and, you know, said, well, we'll just do this instead. And those songs were a lot more fun to like play, and they were more exciting than anything we would have written for a second record if it was still sci-fi.
You know, I think it's interesting now, and this is probably more from the, you know, from us still being vinyl days and cassette days, to be thinking in terms of a record, like a, you know, like a concept in many ways.
Yeah.
Did Shit Out of Luck have that? I'm not as familiar with that one. Or was that just more, it was Girls probably, right? Is that what you're...
Yeah, we were still just kind of writing songs, like, we were just stoked that we would have, you know, songs to play pretty much at that point. Yeah, there was no real concept around it, you know. It was just, you know, your basic pop punk, like, topics that everybody writes songs about that play that genre.
Is there any moments, you know, and we each have stages in the band where, you know, where you look back and you say, wow, we went from there to here, and I don't know if you can pinpoint moments, but was there a moment where you really thought you guys gelled as a band?
Yeah, I think, like, right before we did Death by Television, it was definitely, like, the point, because we would practice a lot, you know, like when Tim would come up, he would stay all weekend and we would practice for, you know, hours and hours, you know, just playing the same shit over and over again. And then we went out, like, out on our first tour, and
I'm sorry, can you just go back a little bit? I wanted to say, Cody, we lost you. I think the internet went bad, so
yeah, I think it was after or right before Shit Out of Luck, because we practiced so much, you know. We spent hours and hours practicing when Tim would come up on the weekends, and we recorded a live record. We went out on our first tour after that record came out, and we did a live record at the Jam Room in South Carolina. And we would listen back to that, and we were pretty proud of like how tight it was, you know, to us then.
You have these songs. Did you already know where you wanted to go by the time you had had this record ready to record it?
No, we didn't. We kind of like shopped it, or like tried to shop it around, I guess. And like, nobody really wanted to back it. So we wanted to go to Sonic Iguana because that's where everybody was going at that point. And then we also thought about going to the Jam Room to do it because the live record turned out so well there. I think we thought about going to like Egg Studio in Seattle because like it had recorded there, you know, but we didn't know anything really about that place, so we kind of wrote that off early. But yeah, it was between those two choices. I think it was because Sonic Iguana had a loft, like a band room that you could stay at, so we didn't have to pay for a hotel.
that's yeah, that kept me there a lot. So you all on the of course on the wiki and the, you know, here that this is kind of how we used to do it, but you raised all that money yourselves, right?
Yeah, well, Corey was working in the oil field and like I was working at the grocery store, and we were saving everything we made. Like we didn't have anything, you know, like we didn't have anything nice. We just took all our money and spent that, you know, just to go tour and come back broke and do it again. And that's pretty much how like we ended up paying for Death by Television, was just from our jobs, you know.
You guys probably drove it from Wyoming to Lafayette, right?
Yeah.
Were you in a car? Or what, did you have a van then? Or what did you...
Yeah, we took the van out there. Yeah, it was like 20 hours or something like that, I think.
And did you just walk in that studio and just get started right away? Or did you have a day of rest? Or?
No, I don't think we did. Yeah, I think we walked in there like... That, I think we got there that morning. We stayed the night outside of Lafayette, and then we pulled in like at 10 or noon or something like that and just loaded in. Well, we didn't load in anything. We used all the stuff that was there pretty much. So, yeah, we just started right away.
So you didn't have your own – did you have – you had an amp of your own, and then you just decided to use the stuff in the studio?
Yeah. I had a real nice crate. Real nice crate.
I asked him this too, and he said it was just getting there and seeing all the CDs on the wall. But what is the sort of feeling that, I don't know, scene connected with that of being in Sonic Iguana? What moment crystallizes in you of the fact that you were actually there recording? Basically, I'm asking any memory that you have of it.
I know we were really excited just because of all the records that had come out of there, you know. And
I don't want to be a granola head.
Yeah, and like seeing all the stuff up on the walls and stuff was definitely it was really, really cool feeling. I think that night after we got done tracking and stuff and everybody left, like Corey and I were kind of like went downstairs and we were just looking around and we were like, I don't know, just blown away. We were like, holy shit, we're recording here. This is awesome.
You know, I've actually never explained this space on a podcast, so can you just sort of give a rundown of what Mass's studio is about? Like, what is the layout? Because what you're saying is what a lot of bands do, so just give a little bit of what it's like there.
Yeah. Well, it's really cold, for one.
I know why that is, you know, because the equipment heats up, and there it's on the same system as the upstairs room, so... Since it was so hot down there, the air conditioner would never go, or the heating would never go on up there, so you'd always be cold.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He told us it was to keep us from getting lazy.
Well.
Which worked. We used to call it Sonic Igloo.
All right, so I guess I sort of gave it. Yeah, there's the upstairs area, and then you sort of live up there, and I would do that too. I would sneak. There was something cool about being there. In that sort of ghost of a space with all the, you know, if you believe in the spirits of, you know, or the energy of people who were there. It's really cool just sneaking down there at night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was rad for sure.
What was there any kind of different recording approach? You know how Mass is pretty anal and works towards perfection. Was there a big change in how that was recorded from your previous stuff?
Oh, yeah. I think we originally booked like 6 days. And before we went in, like, we practiced those songs, like, a shit ton, and we were just, it's pretty funny, like, it was real eye-opener, because we were kind of joking around before we got in there. We're like, before we would record everything live, basically, and then overdub, like, guitar leads, and, like, record a second guitar lead, or guitar track, and then just, you know, overdub, like, vocals and backups and all the other stuff, and, so we were like kind of joking around. We're like, shit, 6 days. That's what are we going to do when we get done? Like with the rest of the days that we have left. And, yeah, that wasn't the case at all. I think we figured out that wasn't going to happen when it was like day three and we were still working on drums.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim was saying that he had never worked with a click before. So
it was pretty funny back then. Like he started playing with the click, and I think Mass asked him, he was like, have you ever played with a click before? And he's like, no. And he tried it out and he came back in and he was like, I like that click. That makes it a lot easier. And then we listened back to the drum tracks and the click track, and like, they would totally go in and out of sync with each other the whole time. And like, I remember Corey and I just laughing our asses off about that.
So you guys had to go back again, right?
Yeah. We had to book like another shit. I think it was like another 6 days or something like that to finish it, because it was bare bones when we left there. A lot of the vocals and stuff weren't even done.
Are you someone who works on orders of song for a long time, or do you just sort of just feel it out and go, that looks good?
Like for sequencing on a record or something?
Sequencing.
Yeah, we never gave it any thought before, and we've never really sequenced any of our own records anyway, because Ben did them all for us.
So that was no worry of yours, they just sort of all work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, the songs seem to sort of stand on their own and to the theme.
Yep. Yeah. We would have certain ideas, like obviously like an opening song and a closing song, or like, I think we always pick those, but everything else we were pretty open to suggestions.
How was touring after that? Did you tour immediately for that record? And was there any difference in audience reaction from before and after that record?
Yeah, I mean, when we toured before with Shit Out of Luck, like nobody showed up to the shows, so that was a major changed right there. You know, there were people at the shows. The first tour we did after that record came out was with the Teen Idols, so like all the shows were really, really good because they were like doing really well at the time, and they were one of the funnest bands to tour with.
Alongside the Teen Idols?
I don't know. Like, I think a person's always more critical of themselves than anybody else. But in some ways, yeah. I know before we did that tour, like, we played a few shows in Wyoming with Homeless Wonders. And we canceled out halfway through because we realized we sucked. So we went home and, like, practiced our asses off for that tour.
That's interesting to be a... Did you feel sort of change between this is my cousin and then this is my friend? Or was that always something that was just there?
It was... Well, I don't know. It's weird because, like, before we started hanging out and, like, listening to tunes and doing anything, like, with music, like, we didn't really, you know, see each other that much. Because he was old enough that, like, when I was a freshman, he was a senior. So, like, we weren't really together too much, and... So I guess like I've only really known him through the music stuff.
Tim was pretty honest about how he thought it went down. But what sort of happened when Tim left?
He went on a mission, like a Mormon mission. It's something like that he wanted to do, and at the same time, like there were times when we like didn't really get along with Tim that well, you know, like because Corey and I were pretty. We were super uptight, you know, way more than we needed to be. And Tim was way more just kind of, you know, happy-go-lucky, like, don't give a shit kind of personality. And so, like, it was always kind of off-putting to us. So, and I think we were kind of thinking of, like, getting somebody else anyway. And then he sent us a letter that said that he was going to leave to go on this mission and stuff. And... Yeah, and so we were kind of, like, stoked, but at the same time, it was kind of, I don't know, we always missed him. He always, like, brought an element to that band that, like, that was never there afterwards.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and this might be more of a statement than a question, but I sometimes avoid sort of talking about those things because you never know about feelings towards each other, and yeah, I know you probably had some hard times with him, but it seems like you guys are just the type that were... just dealt with it, and it didn't really hurt in the long run relations with him. Do you feel that you are still friends?
Yeah, and I think, like, honestly, I think with all the shit that we went through, like with us and him, like I think we're a lot closer now because of it, you know, because we did have those like fights and stuff and everything. I think, I don't know, there's definitely like when you're putting that much time, that much of your life into something for that long, that's kind of part of your life, you know? And he was like part of our life. We were a part of his. So, and we always talk about how fun those days were and stuff. And I think it was a good thing.
I didn't have time to ask Tim this, but what was it? The, you know, I joined you on one of those tours. Which tour was that? The one with the,
that was the Muffs, right?
Yeah. The Muffs. Yeah. What was that like, honestly? I never really asked you. What was it like to just have, you know, I drove all the way out to Texas, I think, if I'm not mistaken. What the hell was up with that?
I don't know. You listened to Ozzy the whole way, too.
Oh, I did, didn't I? Yeah, Ozzy and, you know, all the way through the middle of the country, there's all those religious stations, too. A lot of...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When we were on tour, Corey would put that shit on and just, like, he wouldn't let us change the channel. He would just force us to listen to it.
Yeah, and I rented a car, right? So I drove with the van, and sometimes you'd be in the car, and we'd switch off, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think I didn't ride with you very much because I was the only person who could navigate the other two guys. No, that was cool. Like we were definitely stoked to have you for sure.
Like I wrote, you know, Tim asked for my book, and I wrote a little thing in there for him that said that it sort of revitalized music for me because I don't know. Some people started getting disillusioned with the pop punk, and I thought you guys really captured something that you couldn't say that was wholly different because it's, you know, it's Ramones based, you know, pop punk, but there was something that you guys were doing that seemed genuine. And I think it also made you guys critical of other bands too. Do you agree?
Oh yeah. We're always super critical of other bands and ourselves.
Could you place what you think was different or what would make you separate yourselves from some of those other bands?
I don't know, you know, like if we would just have recorded like, you know, shit out of luck type stuff the whole time, I don't think people would have taken as much note of us as they have now. You know, I think it was that record that kind of people kind of like took notice of it. And I think a lot of it was just because it wasn't based on like typical pop punk stuff at that time. And it was a little harder and it was a little darker, you know, and I would say if anything, it was probably those qualities.
Do you think there was a, and sometimes this can be exaggerated, but you guys all sort of speak to this, that this, you were thinking that you were just going to record this and you didn't know if it was going to be put out, you were just going to do it, maybe call it quits. Do you think that sort of gave you a freedom or did it make it more important or intense to record and write those songs?
I think it helped just because there was no pressure at all, you know? And I mean, not that there's like a lot of pressure anyway, but I know when we started writing those songs, it was just like, let's, you know, like I said, we weren't really listening to a lot of like pop punk stuff at the time. We were just, we always said that like we were writing a rock record. We weren't writing like a pop punk record.
And you've been doing something long enough, it's in your bones. And even when you go look at some other, you know, genres, you're going to bring a little bit of that with you. So yeah. It makes sense that it has like a pop punk foundation, but it went to some place that, as of yet, hadn't been done.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, Cody.
Thank you.
But it didn't last too long. Like, you're one of the bands, those one of the bands that didn't last too long. You got together again a while later to record something.
Yeah, the Too Late Show.
Yeah. And you joined the brothers band, the Teenage Bottle Rocket. That seem a natural progression for you?
Yeah, it was weird. Like, after we broke up, it was kind of nice because, like I said before, like, we would just work and, you know, like, all of our money would go towards, like, the band stuff. So when we split up, it was kind of nice just, like, living, like, regular life for a while, you know, like, being able to afford nice things and shit like that. But then, I don't know, I think I got pretty depressed when we weren't doing stuff, you know. It was cool at first, but after a while it was like something was missing, you know. And I was, you know, like, Brandon and I were always like really good buddies, and they asked me to go on a play guitar on a tour because, like, Joel, who was playing guitar with him at the time, couldn't go because he had something to do, like, for his degree at the university. And so I went with them on that tour, and it was kind of like what you said about, like, going with us. It kind of, like, rekindled your, you know, it was like that spark that kind of got you back into all that stuff.
This may be hard to answer, but it might not be an answer. But, you know, when I was thinking about the Queers and Boston, New Hampshire, sort of, there was sort of a competition between the two areas where New Hampshire was trying to compete with Boston and try to create their own sound and personality. What do you think? Do you think Wyoming does something to you musicians? What comes out of Wyoming? What?
Coal.
Do you think there's any attitude in the music that you did with either band that's is Wyoming grown?
I don't know. Like, it's hard to tell because I've only been from Wyoming.
Yeah. I don't even know myself. I don't know the answer to that one with you guys, but
I think there's definitely, like, something with like being neglected of, like, a lot of shit that other people, you know, have readily available to them that kind of, it's kind of a driving force, I think, to, like, actually do something.
It seems like, even when I see you with the Teenage Bottle Rocket Boys or with the Lillingtons, they're it, and why even my book I call you the Boys from Wyoming, there, it does seem to be still, like, it's important that there is some sort of friendship going on in the band, that it's not just a band. It's, am I just projecting that on that, or does that feel that way with you?
No, it's definitely there. Like, we all definitely care for each other and stuff, and, you know. Yeah, it's like, I don't think it would be, if I had to be in a band with people, you know, that I didn't like, I just wouldn't be in a band at all, you know. It's not that important that, you know.
And now I think that's in a sort of an extreme view on Wyoming, but I do think it's there, that, and more so than any other, if I'm stereotyping about areas, it did seem very strong in the bands that I saw that came out of that area.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's a whole lot of people who are into the same shit in this, you know, in the whole state. So, like, when you find somebody who's into the same stuff you like, you're kind of like, you kind of become buddies.
Thank you for listening to episode 38 of Jughead's Basement Subgenre Lo-Fi Interviews with Hi-Fi Guest. Today, starring Cody Templeman from Teenage Bottle Rocket and the Lillingtons. I did not say beforehand that this period of time, when I did the interview in April of 2013, Lillingtons were not playing out. So there's a reference to it in there, but I was going to say it beforehand so that you would understand more and not be confused when we were talking about the band in the past tense. But the band was in the past tense and is now still in the present tense. Cody is actually doing double duties in both those bands. And the Hybrids, from when, if I'm not mistaken, is also still active with and without Cody, from what I hear about that, too. Thank you very much. I am now working on the Smoking Popes episode. It'll still take a few months to get it all done, but I just got finished with all three brothers. I visited Josh's house, and then Eli's house, and then Matt came over to my house for cheese and crackers and some pepperoni sausage. Also, please, 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 if you can, donate donuts. Yeah, eat donuts. Please, eat donuts. And while you're eating donuts, please donate to Jughead's Basement. You can do that very easily just by going to PayPal and putting in jugheadsbasement@gmail.com and giving me like $100 or $10 or $1. Or you can join the Patreon and pay anywhere from $2 to $5 to $10 a month. The 5 and 10 over, if you pay over 3 months, you will get a free Jughead's Basement t-shirt. Also, if you can't do that, that's fine. What you can do is go to iTunes and give a 5-star review, hint, hint, and actually write a review, because those actually go very far. They help quite a bit. So please, even if you're not used to iTunes, just take a little trip over there and see if you can figure it out. I've done that before too. And lastly, share the episodes. If you like this one, then go back and share the episode number 6 of the Lillingtons or any of the other episodes that I have done. Thank you very much. And you are important to somebody. Thank you. Goodbye.